Once you have a contract in place, one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give any contractor out there is change orders. Make sure you have them. Make sure you're using them. If something changes on the scope of the project, how much you're doing, you're moving a doorway to a place that wasn't in the original plans. You're like, oh yeah, but I called the customer. They're good with it. We're fine. No, you're not. Do a written change order.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey everybody, Brian Kaskavalsian here. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. So I have a special guest today, and I'm going to tell you right up front, this is the worst podcast episode you're going to listen to on the Wealthy Contractor, because I'm going to be talking to a lawyer. However, at the same time as this being the worst podcast episode you're going to listen to, it could be a very, very, very valuable episode for you, because there are legal issues out there that contractors deal with that you need to be aware of that can get you in a lot of trouble. And so with that set up, we're all excited for this episode. I'm being facetious, of course, but I want to introduce you all to Heather Macklin. Heather is an attorney, but she's also the owner of a home improvement company, and she also does some other stuff. She's going to talk a little bit about her resume. So, Heather, welcome.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me today.
So what did you think about that setup, about this being the worst episode?
You know, I agree with it, Brian. I often say to people, like, when we talk about these issues, it's not sexy, but it's necessary.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't create revenue as a lawyer for my home improvement clients, but I protect the revenue that they make. And that's just important, because that protected revenue goes right to the bottom line.
Yeah. And what we don't want is, you know, we're so busy every day running our businesses and dealing with our people and dealing with our customers and dealing with cash flow, that these laws that are passed that we don't even know about. And then you combine that with lawyers that are out there that are looking to take advantage of situations. We don't want you to be a target. And so Heather is here because she's going to go over some of the things. It's 2025. Here are the ways that you can get sued, screwed, taken advantage of, whatever we want to call it. And so, Heather, before we jump into all of that, give them like the 2-minute version of all of what you're doing and your background and what you're involved with.
Sure. So first and foremost, I am an attorney. I've been an attorney for more than 25 years. I was at a big law firm in Chicago for 20 years, where I was a partner doing complex commercial litigation. And then my husband and I moved to Wisconsin about almost 9 years ago, went to a smaller firm here in Wisconsin, became an owner of that firm. And then 2.5 years ago, I started my own firm. So Macklin Law LLC is my firm. I still do some litigation. But after 25 years of litigating, what I've learned from that battle, that fight on behalf of clients, is something that I'm trying to turn into more of a useful lesson for my clients so that they never get into those battles and fights. So I'm trying to use my 25 years of experience to teach people what not to do so that they can avoid litigation. Now, we live in a litigious society, so it's not always easy to avoid litigation. But if you follow these steps, if you do find yourself in litigation, you should be in a better position to resolve it more quickly, less expensively. Litigation is time consuming. It's expensive. It's stressful. Nobody enjoys it. And if we can avoid it or get you out of it more quickly by following some of these tips, you'll be better off. In addition to being an attorney with my own law firm, my husband's also an attorney. We are in the home improvement space. I'm an owner of a concrete coating company. We're a Pentec dealer here in Appleton, Wisconsin. So I'm not just a lawyer who's sitting here, doesn't understand what home improvement business owners are going through on a day-to-day basis, just spewing the legal stuff at you and expecting you to get it. Like, I live it personally on a day-to-day basis as an owner of a company. My husband's also one of the founders and owners of One in Fund. So he's, you know, he's in the home improvement world as well. You probably, a lot of your listeners have probably met him and seen him at some of the conferences that everybody goes to, but he's doing that. He's also one of the principals in Finish Line Strategies, which works with a lot of home improvement companies who are looking to sell in the next couple of years. So, you know, he's partnered there with Brian Gottlieb and Brianna Hetherington, Todd Reese, and they're advising companies on what they need to do now to set themselves up to be in the best, most valuable position when it is time to sell. So all of that, we have a lot.
It's a lot of experience. You know, Rob is I'm not sure how many deals he's been a part of, but it's a lot. Rob has been involved in a lot of the big private equity deals that have been happening over the last few years. And so between the two of you, I mean, you guys are just like a home improvement powerhouse.
We enjoy working with our home improvement clients, and you know, we love seeing the success that they're garnering right now. Something that they built from almost nothing, and you know, something you said earlier in the introduction, Brian, like, or maybe it was when we were talking, but you know, home improvement companies, the people who started them, they're really good at what they do, right? They're really, really good at windows or baths or HVAC or carpentry or whatever their business is. They're really good at that. And that's why they're successful in it. But that doesn't mean that they are good or great at understanding the morass of laws that are out there, right? The myriad of laws and regulations that apply to this industry that can be some really terrible pitfalls. You know, and you don't know what you don't know, and that's fair. So I think, you know, making sure that while you're, you know, talking to the marketing experts and the lead generation experts, and you're talking about KPIs and all of the stuff that we talk about in the home improvement industry, you also need to make sure that you're also stepping back and going, all right, this isn't the fun part of it, but I need to get advisors and people who can guide me through some of this stuff to make sure that I'm not doing things I shouldn't do, or I'm not doing things that I should do. And that's where the lawyers come in.
So let's talk about some of that stuff. What do owners need to be careful of in 2025?
Sure. So there's a lot of things, and we'll touch on them at a high level. And the first one I'm going to talk about is not the one that everybody has been talking about the last few months. We will talk about the TCPA. But what I think is really important is to start sort of foundationally. And the very first thing is looking at how you have formed your corporation. Are you an LLC? Are you a corporation? What documentation do you have in place? What should you have in place, right? A lot of people think like, hey, I formed my LLC. I filed my documents with the state. I'm good. I'm an LLC and I am personally protected if the company gets sued. They aren't going to come after me personally because that's why I formed an LLC or a corporation. That's not all of it. That's not enough of it. You have to understand there are other things you need to be doing with respect to corporate formalities in order to maintain that layer of protection. So let's say if you do have an LLC, which is pretty common, a lot of home improvement companies do the limited liability company route, and it doesn't matter what state you're in. These are tips that you need to be aware of. You need to maintain your corporate formalities. It's great that you formed the LLC or the corporation, but you need to have a corporate record book. And this is something that your legal counsel, legal advisor can help you with. It's not a hard thing to do. It's just a routine, mundane thing that needs to happen every year. You need to file your annual report with your state. You need to make sure that you have your articles of organization or your operating agreement if you're an LLC. And that just sets forth the rules of how your company is going to be governed and who has the authority to do things on behalf of the company. Every year, you want to make sure that you have an annual meeting minutes. Doesn't mean you have to have an annual meeting. You might be the only member of the LLC. You're not going to have a meeting with yourself, But you have to have the documentation. You have to have a consent so that it's just another document. It's a form document that says, yes, I as the member consent to all these things being able to be done for my company, opening a bank account, contracting with people, getting insurance, all those various things. And if you're married, you want to make sure you have a spousal consent, because if your spouse isn't an owner of the company, you know, God forbid something happens to you. If you have partners in the company, you want to make sure that your spouse has signed something saying that if they're in a marital property state, they're not going to claim ownership. And you've already done that ahead of time.
Aren't there services that are relatively inexpensive that helps you make sure that all of your corporate books are up to date?
There absolutely are.
What are they called again?
Well, I mean, it depends. You might be thinking of like a corporate agent or a registered agent.
Yep.
They have services out there that, so initially registered agents started as like, we'll accept any filings on your behalf. If you get sued, service of process will come to us and we'll give it to you. That's one thing that they do. They can also help with your corporate formalities for sure. And there's a small annual fee that they do. I would ask around where you're at or ask people you know in the industry who they work with on the legal side of things, because there's a lot of lawyers out there who can do this for you, who can start to develop a relationship with you in your business and understand your business. And like my law firm, we do it for a small annual fee. It's not expensive.
Oh, you guys do it?
We do. Okay. And I know a lot of people hear lawyer and think, oh, it's going to be all these legal fees and so expensive, because they bill by the hour. Certain things, yes, we do bill by the hour. But when it comes to maintaining corporate formalities, we have an annual package for our clients. And it's just, we take care of that and make sure you have all the documentation.
Yeah. And I would imagine it's not all that
much. It's a few hundred dollars a year. Yeah. It's not.
You know what we'll do is make sure you give me a link so we can put a link in the show notes.
Sure.
Because I know that that's something I know that I just got for our corporations. I just got the Florida filings that we've got to do. And I usually do them because they're pretty quick and simple. Mm-hmm. But as far as the books go, I probably shouldn't say this like live. I'm not sure if our books are entirely up to date. And so this is a reminder for me as well to make sure I look into it. Okay. So that's entity wise, how you protect yourself.
I was going to add, making sure your bank accounts, you know, that you have bank accounts for the entity and you're not commingling funds. You know, don't use it as your personal piggy bank. Make sure that you're documenting and getting receipts for everything. So that's on the entity side of things. The next thing I would say from a foundational perspective is your contract documents, right? That not only with your customers, but also with your employees and with your vendors. So starting with your employees. Let's start there. You know, you want to make sure you've got an employee handbook and you want to make sure you have something in writing, not necessarily a contract. You want your employees probably to still be at will employees, but you still have something in writing that sets forth what you've agreed your compensation is going to be, what their job duties are, so that everybody understands. Because it's really easy up front to be like, oh yeah, we had a conversation. We're good. This is all exciting. And then a problem happens down the road and they make a claim or they say you agreed to something and you're like, no, that's not what we agreed to. But if you don't have it in writing, it's he said, she said, and you know, you're fighting over that. So just having it down in a written form that everybody has agreed and sort of signed off and said, yeah, that's what our relationship is and how you're paying me and what I've agreed to do for you. And then with your clients, you want to make sure your contract has everything that it needs to have in it, all the terms and conditions that, you know, whether it's, you know, you've got a separate terms and conditions that's attached or it's all part of the same document. You know, a lot of states have statutes. I'm in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin has what we call the Home Improvement Practices Act. If you're doing any home improvement in the state of Wisconsin, there are rules under that statute of what your contract has to be and what terms it has to have in it. And if you don't have that in place and a complaint is lodged against you, either at the state level, you know, with the Department of Trade and Consumer Protection, or somebody files a lawsuit against you, you could find yourself in trouble and have some liability if you don't have everything in your contract that you need to have. And in that respect, every state is different. Some have these Home Improvement Practices Act, some don't. So making sure that you've got a legal advisor who can help you through that, look at your contract, help you with your terms and conditions, talking to you about your payment terms, your warranty, limitation of liability, right? What you're liable for, what you're not, so that that's all in writing with your customers upfront. It's really important to do that. And the biggest piece of advice I can give people here is a do not do. Do not go to Google and pull a contract, because you don't know who wrote that contract. You don't know what state that contract was written for. You don't know how many times somebody has edited and thrown things in that shouldn't be there. You don't know if the law has changed since that contract was written. And last I checked, Google does not have a law degree. So
do you want me to admit something I did 20 plus years ago I can't get in trouble for anymore? Is I started a franchise in 2003, franchise company. Mm-hmm. You know how I did the agreement? I had two or three agreements from other franchise companies, and instead of paying a lawyer, whatever it was going to be some ridiculous amount of money. Mm-hmm. I just basically copied everything from another franchise agreement and just filled in my blanks. And that's probably not the best. I did that with our home improvement contracts too, way back in the day. Probably not the best way to do that. As you just explained. And look, for the listener, the stuff that we're talking about here is, it's not stuff you even want to think about. It's not stuff you have time to deal with. You don't want to mess around with this stuff. But what we don't want, and part of the reason why I asked Heather to be here, is because the last thing you want is to do everything right, but then have a customer turn around or an employee turn around and now come after you because of something really stupid. I was going to mention this to you that I have a niece who's an attorney. She's an employment attorney. Mm-hmm. And she just started a new firm about, I think it's been 7 or 8 months now. And it is shocking to me, absolutely shocking to me. She'll tell me about some of these cases. And they've gone from like zero to a good business like that, because one of the things that they're settling big cases, like they just settled a case for like $1.6 million. And I'll say, well, what did the employer do wrong? And she'll tell me, and I'm like, how is that worth $16, let alone $1.6 million. But what's funny is I have a conflict, because I'm happy for her that she's got the success in her business, mm-hmm, as a lawyer. But she tells me about some of these things, and I feel so bad for the owner of the business.
For sure. And, you know, employment's another one where, boy, you know, in the construction and home improvement world, I've had clients who, you know, I had a client who they had an agreement with their employees. So it was a concrete company. And here in Wisconsin, you know, our weather's not great for a few months out of the year. And so they didn't have the ability to put jobs out there for their employees. And so some years ago, they had an agreement with their employees that during the months where they had the work and the weather was appropriate, they would bank hours. And anybody you talk to in the construction world is familiar with this, that you talk to them, they're like, oh yeah, I work for a company. We banked our hours. So what that meant was during the great months when there was a ton of work to be had and the weather was great and, you know, it was sun up to sundown was a good 14 hours, 15 hours a day, they would work as many hours as they could. They would just get paid for their 40 hours a week, and all the extra hours would get banked. And what this company then did was, in the months where they didn't have work to give these people, they still paid them their 40 hours per week. So people weren't getting laid off. They knew they had consistent source of income coming in. The employees were thrilled with this arrangement, right? They get a couple months off in the winter, go deer hunting. If there's a job that comes up, they'll go in and do it. Like, but they were getting a couple months off, but still getting full-time pay under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which people also call the FLSA, that is illegal. You cannot do that because you're not paying people overtime. And what really sucked for this company was, it's not just a small problem if one employee, disgruntled employee, sues you in the future. that law firm that's going to represent them is now going to come and they're going to do a putative class action. They're going to seek to look at all your records to see how many employees you did this with. They're going to reach out to all those employees, get them part of the class action. It's a 2-year look back, generally speaking, but it can be a 3-year look back too, if there's willfulness in what you did. And so you're looking at massive amounts of money. And for a company that's margins aren't, you know, crazy, you're not Amazon, you're not, you know, you're not some of these big corporations, that kind of a judgment against you will kill your company.
You know, it can ruin you. Yeah.
Yep. So, and most of the employees in that situation loved it. They loved the arrangement. Yeah. And they were like, why can't we do this? We'll agree. We'll sign anything. And I'm like, nope, federal government has said you can't do that. So yeah, employment is an area where you need to make sure you're doing it correctly. Otherwise you can get hit with a lawsuit. You can also get hit with an investigation, you know, by your state AG's office. And those can be really ugly too. You know, again, here in Wisconsin, if the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection comes in, they can just say, like, we think you may have some issues. We want to investigate. Give us all the records for your company. And when I say all the records for your company, I literally mean it. Every contract you have with a customer, every contract you have with an employee, all of your documentation for the last 5 years. And you're like, well, I haven't done anything wrong. You haven't said I've done anything wrong. Doesn't matter. We can still come in and do that.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to make sure.
What else?
All right. So you're making sure your documents are in order. You want to make sure you have the right insurance in place. You know, when I talk about insurance, it's the same kind of thing as we're talking about here. When I say that, you know, getting legal counsel and talking about these issues isn't sexy. Like, often I'll say to people, like, well, do you have vehicles in your company that you own, that the company owns, right? That your installers drive or your sales teams drive? And they're like, oh, yeah. I'm like, so you don't have insurance for those vehicles, right? And they're like, well, no, of course I have auto insurance. Yeah, well, you may never need it, but you're going to pay that premium every year because of the protection that that policy is going to afford you if, God forbid, there's an accident or a ticket or something happens, right? So the legal stuff is the same, right? I view us as almost another insurance policy. But you do want to make sure you have your insurance policies in place. You want your auto, you want your commercial general liability policy, you want your workers' comp policy. You know, you want to make sure that you have the right policies in place for your business. And that means talking to your insurance broker, talking to your legal counsel, having them talk to each other, making sure that you have the right policies and the right limits on those policies, right? Making sure that the limit that your policy goes to is going to afford you the necessary protection if a claim is brought against you that is covered by that policy. Because the worst thing ever is when you think you're covered, a claim comes in, you give it to your insurance company and they go, yep, policy limit is this. Sorry, your damages are going to be 15 times that. You're liable for those damages over and above that policy limit. So depending on how big your jobs are, you want to make sure that you've got the right thing in place for that. So with respect to your documentation, your standard form contract, you know, probably want your counsel to review that every 12 to 18 months, because there's things that happen in the law, you know, a court issues an opinion. So just have your lawyer look at it, make sure if there's anything that needs to be tweaked. If you're going to do a custom contract with somebody, it happens from time to time, especially on some of the bigger transactions, right? Don't do that one by yourself either. Make sure that you are having your counsel work with you on that. Once you have a contract in place, one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give any contractor out there is change orders. Make sure you have them. Make sure you're using them.
Psst. Hey, you over there. So look, there's a rumor going around. Some of the most successful home improvement businesses aren't just lucky, they're part of something bigger. Some sort of secret group. Have you heard whispers of the Wealthy Contractor Success Society? Look, I found a way you could take a peek inside. Visit theentrydoor.info. Here, take it. Theentrydoor.info. Hurry, before the door closes again.
If something changes on the scope of the project, how much you're doing, you're moving a doorway to a place that wasn't in the original plans, you've changed out a different window for what was originally agreed upon, the timeline is going to change. Maybe there was a supply chain delay and you didn't get the windows from the manufacturer in time, and that, you know, your original contract said the project would be done by August 1st, but this delay is going to mean September 1st. You're like, oh yeah, but I called the customer. They're good with it. We're fine. No, you're not. Do a written change order. Because if there's a dispute down the road, again, it's going to be he said, they said. And if you have a written change order that everybody agreed to and signed at the time, you're going to be in a much better position than saying, oh, they agreed to it, you know, in a phone conversation or while we were at the job site. Get a change order. Use it, sign it, and don't do the new work until you have a signed change order. And then with respect to documentation, have somebody look at your document retention policy. Most of you probably don't have one. So have somebody create one for you, right? A lot of people don't think about this.
What is that? Document retention policy?
Yeah. So, you know, in today's digital world, once upon a time, right, you had paper files and you'd start to run out of room and you'd be like, oh, that file's 5 years old, throw it away, right? We don't do that anymore. We are all in computers and in the cloud and everything is digitally retained. And you don't think about that, that it's all there, because if out of sight, out of mind, right? So have somebody come in and talk to you about how long do you need to maintain certain records for? It's usually going to be the statute of limitation in your state for the type of work you're doing. You know, is it a contract action? You know, maybe it's a 5-year statute of limitation for contracts. Maybe it's a 10-year. It depends on your state. Negligence can be a claim. So you want to make sure you know how long you should be maintaining documents and files for. And once you don't have to maintain them anymore, get rid of them. Don't have them hanging around. And within your files, there's probably a lot of stuff that's generated in the course of a project that you don't need to hang on to after the fact. And the reason why this is important is this. If you get sued, God forbid, but if there's a lawsuit, the lawyers are going to go through what they call discovery. They're going to serve written questions on each other, you know, on each side, asking for certain information and documents. And that is something they're entitled to do, and you are obligated to comply with and provide those records. The more documents you have stored that are unnecessary, the more time your lawyer is going to have to spend going through them to see what is relevant. Is it privileged? Does it need to be redacted? And then you're going to have to give over records to the other side. And every minute, every hour that your lawyer has to spend reviewing hundreds, thousands of pages of documents that might not be relevant is going to cost you money. It's also going to cost you mind suck, is what we call it, in your company. Because somebody in your company whose job is not to gather documents to give to your lawyer is going to have to take away from their daily job duties and do that and work with your lawyer to get them the documents they need. That means they're not doing their revenue creating job for you. So making sure that you're not hanging on to thousands and thousands of documents that you don't need to have, really in the long run, it will save you money. It'll save you headache. And it's just a good practice. And I'll say this too, from, you know, watching Rob and helping him with some of his business sales that he's done for home improvement. You know, in those deals, when somebody wants to buy your company, there's a data room that is created, and it's all the documents and records about your business that the buyer wants to see to make sure that you're doing as well as you say you're doing, who you're doing business with, what your contracts say. And again, all of that, if you have it hanging around and it's just this flotsam and jetsam of documents, it's going to go in that data room and it's going to give the buyer the opportunity to dig through it all and hopefully use it to say, ah, we don't think you're worth what we thought you were worth. So we're going to actually negotiate the purchase price down from what it was. So again, making sure you're retaining your documents in a smart fashion can be really important both in the here and now and in the future if you're thinking about selling one day.
Yeah, because when you're thinking about selling, they want to see everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And it's kind
of, have you ever seen the meme out there on the internet of the ladies who like sniff people's armpits for deodorant testing? That's what your buyer is doing when they're coming into your company. And they, at first, it sounds great. There's a letter of intent. Yep. They've signed it. They've said, yeah, we think we're going to pay you this many millions. And then they go through your records and they find all the warts and the this and the that. And then they're like, yeah, it's not worth that. And so that excitement of what you thought you were going to get, maybe it's not as much as you could have gotten. But if all that stuff wasn't there, it probably would have been a much cleaner transaction and you might have stayed closer to that original purchase price. So,
all right. So now we've talked about all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's get to the like the really meaty stuff, which is all the marketing stuff and the phone and texting and all of that.
So those dreaded four letters, the TCPA.
TCPA.
And now, everybody in this industry, especially in the last 6 months, man, it's been whiplash. It really has. You know, that approaching that date in January when the new one-to-one consent rules were supposed to go into effect, I was actually at a friend's work party in Milwaukee. We were sitting in a bar and my phone starts blowing up and I'm like watching it and I'm like, holy cow. And I'm not on the phone with my paralegal and we're drafting emails and we're sending them out to clients and like, hey, it just got stayed. Wait a second. It actually just got vacated because it happened in that order, right? The FCC issued a stay for a year. 5 minutes later, the 11th Circuit ruled on the case, the insurance case out there, and said, nope, we're vacating the rule. So it's not, I've seen some stuff get circulated lately, like some of the different vendors are putting out, you know, emails to their client base and their potential customers and clients saying, hey, it's stayed until 2026 by the FCC, or I've even seen them saying it's stayed until 2026 by the 11th Circuit. No. The FCC stayed it, and 5 minutes later, the 11th Circuit vacated it. The one-to-one rule is gone. It is not stayed, and it won't come back unless the FCC goes through the rulemaking process again. There is, however, still the revocation coming up. The new revocation rules, reasonable revocation, is coming up. April 11th is the effective date of that rule. And this just changes how we as home improvement contractors have to allow for our customers to revoke whatever consent they've given us to contact them. But if we back up from that a little bit, you know, the TCPA, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, when you're getting leads and you've got potential customers and you get their phone numbers, you need to make sure you're complying with the TCPA. I don't practice by fear mongering. I think some do, and I don't. I'm going to say, though, it's a scary piece of legislation. It is a scary piece of legislation that can put you in a bet the business position, and none of us want to be there. And it's not always an easy piece of legislation to understand. The regulatory scheme that comes out of this congressional act is hairy. And it's not always easy to understand, even for the, you know, the legal experts, right? And so there's two sides of it, really, is how I explain it to my clients. You know, you've got the prior express written consent side, right? And then you have the do not call side is kind of the easy way to think about it. And so in order to use regulated technology in contacting your lead sources with marketing or advertising promotional material. And when I say regulated technology, you know, everybody hears, you know, automated telephone dialing system, the ATDS, right? And they think, well, do I fall within that? And it's, you know, are you using automated technology? Do you have a system that is randomly or sequentially generating or able to randomly generate or sequentially generate phone numbers, right? If you have a system in place, your CRM is able to do random or sequential generation, even if you're not using that, a court, depending on which court you're in around the country, because there's different districts, could find that you are now subject to those rules under the TCPA because you have technology you're using that has the ability to do this, even if you're not actually using that feature of the technology. So if you're using automated telephone dialing, if you're sending automated texts or pre-recorded messages or using AI generated voices when your phone system is calling out, you're subject to this prior express written consent rule. And you want to make sure that you are getting the appropriate prior express written consent. And that could be a whole other, like, entire episode, but you want to talk to your legal counsel and make sure that your consent that you're using on your website, on your face-to-face forms at home shows, on any landing page that customers might be directed to and they're submitting their information and asking you to call them, you need to have this consent language. And it's pretty formulaic. And if you have that in place, then you've satisfied one part of things. Now, if you're manually dialing people, right, you shouldn't fall within that. Again, depending on the technology that you have available to you that you're using. But, you know, if you're got a real person in your call center who's picking up the phone and is dialing the phone number and calling somebody, then you may not fall within that aspect of the law. But again, it's probably best just to make sure that you have the appropriate consent at all time and that you're holding on to those records internally for at least 5 years, that you've got those records and can show that you received consent. Now, the other side of it is the do not call list. And this is really where a lot of people can get into trouble. There are a couple of types of consent that you need to get, because almost everybody has their phone numbers registered with the federal do not call list, or some states have state do not call lists too, and you're subject to both. And if you call somebody's phone number who is on the do not call list and you don't have the appropriate consent, you now open yourself up to potential liability. And on both sides of this statute, whether it's the prior express written consent or the do not call side, there's pretty steep penalties that can come into play here.
It's ugly. Yeah.
It's really ugly. You know, on the do not call side, it's every violation is a $500 penalty that can be trebled, meaning it can be three times that. And when I say every violation, I don't mean you call a person and your calls to that one person are one violation. Every call to that person is a violation. So a lot of call centers are generating 20 calls a month to somebody. Every single one of those is a violation, subject to penalties of up to $1,500.
Was it you and I that were having the conversation where one of our clients, their, I think, event person wrote down a phone number and got one number wrong?
Yeah. So I have a client who had a canvasser, was in a neighborhood where they had done work. Actually, it was the next door neighbors to the canvasser's cousin. And she had talked to them. They were like, yeah, we'll be interested in this in the future. Absolutely reach out to us. Maybe a couple of months before we're ready to do it. But gave all the information, got all the consent, got the signature. Two digits in the phone number somehow got transposed. I don't know if the customer entered it in and did it, you know, just accidentally hit the numbers wrong, or if the canvasser heard the numbers wrong and transposed two digits. So my client's call center called the number they had, and I think they called it about 25 times over the space of 30 days. Never got a person. The message wasn't clear, the voicemail message that they were getting. Sometimes they left voicemails, sometimes they didn't. Well, the person they were calling was not the person that had given them consent. And unfortunately, the person they were calling is somebody who may or may not be a professional litigant under the TCPA, but reached out to an attorney on the East Coast who has made his entire practice about TCPA violations. And he sued my client as a, you know, on behalf of this individual, but also as a putative class action. And that's really where it gets ugly, right? Because now he wanted to look at my client's entire record of calls. And this is a client that's doing about $70 million in revenue a year. So, you know, you can imagine how many hundreds of thousands of phone calls their call center is making.
Yeah.
And it was truly an honest mistake. This is a client of mine who goes to extreme lengths to make sure that they are complying with these regulations. They do their utmost to do everything correctly. Thankfully, we were able to demonstrate that this was a transposed number, that the original people did give us, you know, confirmation that they had given us consent, and that was just two digits off in their phone number. And we were able to negotiate a settlement on behalf of the client that was a whole lot less than a settlement would have been if we'd gone down the path of fighting the lawsuit. But it could have been really ugly.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, it took time out of their business. And by the way, it could be 70 million. It could be 7 million. It could be a million. It still could have happened to anybody. Mm-hmm. And it's still ugly, and it's relative. So this person, it had to have cost them tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, sure. Between the settlement,
tens of thousands, and the lawyer fees.
Yep. The lawyer fees, all of that. It cost a lot of money. And look, you know, that's revenue that goes to the bottom line, but they had to write some pretty big checks out for what was truly an innocent mistake, the TCPA does not really allow for even innocent mistakes. It is a strict compliance statute. Like, you violate it, sorry, you're done. You're screwed.
Does anybody have a document, a white paper, a something that lays this out in just dumb English so somebody like me could understand? Here's what you can do, here's what you can't do, and here's some of the ways to protect yourself. Does something like that exist?
There are, you know, look, there are various vendors out there in the lead generation space who do take this stuff seriously and do their absolute utmost to make sure that they, as the lead generator, are complying with it, and that they're trying to educate, you know, their home improvement customers to make sure that they're complying with it. So, you know, one that comes to mind is Active Prospect. They've got, you know, stuff out there on their website. They host a lot of webinars and they put out a lot of information on this. There are resources out there. I've jokingly laughed that I'm like, I want to create like a flow chart. The problem is that worries me is putting that out there is when you have something like one-to-one consent that changes like it did on a dime. Now you have that old flow chart out there that if I had done a flow chart and I had the one-to-one consent and, you know, or before that, if one-to-one consent had gone in, that old flow chart's floating around out there. Somebody looks at it, thinks they're in compliance, and they don't realize that something has changed in the meantime. So it makes me nervous when that stuff is out there. And that's why I really do think the best thing you can do is to reach out to somebody in the legal space who this is what they do. They keep up on these regulations and they can talk you through what you do in your business and whether you're doing it correctly and what you need to change to put you in the best space possible.
You know, and it's kind of the last thing in the world you want to spend money on, but it's probably not a bad idea to reach out to somebody like Heather to review what you're doing and just make sure that you're in compliance with this TCPA and the do not call, because on the other side of it, it's ugly.
It really is.
And thank goodness the new administration basically halted the new rules that were coming in, because those new rules were pretty draconian, weren't they?
Well, I mean, as I said, they did, but the court is the one who actually blew it up and said, nope, this is not allowed based on your administrative authority.
So then it's not gone? It is impossible.
No, it's gone. The one-to-one consent is gone.
Oh, okay,
vacated it. The current administration, I mean, like, look, there are a lot of lawyers out there who do TCPA work and legal stuff. And let's just be cynical for a moment. That's their business. That's their entire practice is revolving around this statute. That's how they make their living. I certainly advise my clients on it, but as we talked about at the beginning, I'm in the home improvement space. So I have a company that I recognize has to comply with these rules, and I recognize very personally the consequences if we don't. So my practice doesn't revolve around the TCPA. If the TCPA went away tomorrow, on the legal side of things, I'd be fine with it. Yeah. Like, I can continue representing my clients as outside general counsel on all the other stuff. And personally, as a you know, owner of a company, I'd be like, that's probably a good thing for business. Now, I also don't think that we as businesses should be, you know, just randomly harassing people who don't want phone calls from us. Sure. But I think things are very different today than they were in 1991 when the TCPA was first passed. You know, I don't know about you, but my phone is always on silent. And if it buzzes and I look at it and I don't know whose number it is, I just set it down and they leave me a voicemail. Great. And if they don't, I never think about it again.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's that much harassment that's happening. I would like to see the TCPA amended. I would like to see it be a smarter piece of legislation that is more evenly balanced to not only protect the consumer, but also not be so draconian that it can just destroy a business.
Yeah.
And you know, I think sometimes when people talk about like, oh, a business, you know, they're harassing me, we think about it as this abstract thing, right? But you got to remember that business is employing people. It is, It is paying wages to people. It is putting food on the table and a roof over people's heads because they are employed and have a job. And they're giving, they're doing a service to people who want that service, right? They're putting on new roofs. They're putting in better energy efficient windows. Like, it's not an abstract thing. It's literally people's lives being destroyed over this cottage industry of litigation, you know, about things that aren't, I just think the balance right now is really out of whack. And the administration we have right now is probably the best scenario in the past and in the foreseeable future to get some of these changes made.
Yeah. Amen. Well, Heather, this has been very enlightening. And I think that this is a valuable topic. And, you know, you and I have had a couple of conversations around this, and I told you we gotta get this information out there. So for those of you that are still here listening to this, protect yourself. You know, me and Heather, you know, we're here to help you protect yourself and do well in your business, but also, you know, not to get yourself caught up in all of the traps that are out there. There are a lot of traps out there. We are the most litigious society on the planet. And there are lawyers out there that are just looking, just waiting for you to make one tiny little mistake, and they will upend and they will destroy your life. And we don't want to see that happen to anybody. So we will include a link back to you, Heather, in the show notes. So if anybody's got questions, they want to reach out, they can do that. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to talk to anybody. And I'll just leave it with this, Brian. You know, in 25 years, I don't know how many pieces of litigation I've represented people in, how many clients. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good of a result we got in that litigation. We fought off the claims, and maybe they didn't have to pay anything in damages, but doesn't matter how good the result was. In 25 years, I've never had a customer or client come up to me at the end, shake my hand and say, "God, that was fun. Let's do that again."
Right. Yeah.
It's horrible. And they come up to me and they shake my hand and they say, "Thank you for everything you did. We never want to work with you again."
That's right.
And I understand it. I don't take it personally. So yeah, whatever you can do to make sure you're protecting your business, protecting your bottom line, protecting that hard-earned revenue. You know, if I can be of service or help to somebody and guide them in the right way, I'm more than happy to have that conversation.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you. And until next time, everybody, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.
This episode is brought to you by FullThrottle.ai. If you run marketing for a home improvement business, here's the question. Do you actually know which households are in the market for your services right now? Full Throttle does. They use powerful, privacy-safe tech to identify real in-market homeowners. Then they help you reach them instantly across channels like digital ads, social, and even direct mail. And here's the kicker. They show you what's actually working by connecting sales back to specific marketing. So you know your ROI for real. No more guessing, no more vanity metrics, just real results. Check them out at fullthrottle.ai and start turning data into dollars.